everybody. Welcome to Steelers.com live at 4. I'm Missy Matthews, joined by Bob Labriola and Mike Prosciutto. Guys, we are 1 week and 4 hours away from the 2014 NFL Draft. So today we'll kind of do a little preview of what's going to happen next week and also take a look back at 2013. You excited?
Oh, we're only 1 more week and four more hours. That was really a good idea, don't you think, to move us back 2 weeks?
Yeah. I'm actually very disappointed, distraught, what have you. And my disappointment goes to many levels. You know, if you've been a regular follower of this program, you've seen us live on location recently. We were at Stage AE last week, and before that, we were at Heinz Field. So I thought, certainly, we're going to have another interesting locale right before the draft. Where would you want to be? The Bill Nunn Scouting Room, right? I thought we'd do the show from up there, and if I got to look at the big board for maybe 20 minutes or so.
Yeah.
It's not happening.
Even let us on the same floor as the Bill Nunn
Draft. Here we are in the regular studio.
Yep.
But we do have a nice little fancy set going on, so we're feeling drafty today. You like what I did there?
Yeah.
He's just staring.
That's the air conditioner.
I want to back your nerves.
All right, well, let's take a look at what will go on next week, May 8th through 10th, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. Of course, got to leave the big guns for the Thursday show. Just the first round, second and third rounds will start at 7 p.m. That's a half hour later than last year for Friday. Saturday, rounds 4 through 7. And, of course, we will be coming to you live at 4 next Thursday, kind of giving a preview, guys, of what to expect. We'll also have sound from Steelers head coach Mike Tomlin and Kevin Colbert. Their weekly their pre-draft press conference, excuse me, will be happening on Monday.
So that's usually very informative.
Yeah, hey. We'll have something from it that we'll kind of talk about on
There's
the show.
There's a lot of good players, and we're going to pick some of them.
And we won't tell you who any of them are. Except on Thursday, you did say that Kevin Colbert was going to tell you who we were picking on the first round, so you could have it on the show.
Right,
at 4.
Yeah, totally. So make sure you tune in for that. All right, let's take a look at the Steelers' 9 picks that they will have for 2014 next Thursday. I know we've kind of already gone over that. Obviously, the 3 compensatory picks helps out big time this year, especially that third round where the Steelers did not have one, Labs.
Yeah, and the other thing to me, Missy, that stands out about that list is you have 2 picks in the top 50. You're in a draft like this that Kevin Colbert has said a few times that it's the deepest that he can remember in his entire 30 years of doing this in this business. 2 picks in the top 50. The first round pick to me, 15th overall, you got to get a Pro Bowl player. Whoever you pick at number 15 has to be someone who makes a Pro Bowl and not at the end of his 12-year career either. The 46th pick needs to be a quality starter, if not also a Pro Bowl guy. I really think that, you know, you don't want to be up this high picking too often. When you're in the top 15, you got to take advantage of it.
Yeah, if nothing else, it's a good year to be that. Kevin Colbert's not the only guy who's just raving about the depth of talent in this draft. At least from what I can tell, that opinion seems to be universal. A second round pick is maybe like a first round pick, particularly when it's 15 or in that neighborhood. So extrapolate that on down. And if you got to retool with bodies, not a bad year to take a shot at that.
We were past a few days over a year ago whenever the 2013 rookie class was announced for the Steelers. We're going to go down memory lane, shall we? And I know it doesn't actually feel that long ago, but here's a look at the 9 selections the Steelers made last year. We're kind of break down each guy. Obviously, to note here that the Steelers did trade for Shamarco Thomas in the third round. Of course, that's why they did not have a third round pick for this year until they got that compensatory pick. They traded with the Browns. And then Vince Williams also, he was a compensatory pick last year, guys, and that was from the loss of Will Gay back in 2012.
Yeah. You know, when you're looking at these guys too, Missy, I think that when you combine this past draft, and we'll get to them pick by pick, when you combine this past draft with some of the recent drafts as well and look at some different areas that the Steelers missed on and then look at their current roster and see where the needs are, you can kind of understand why the Steelers are going into this 2014 draft with the needs that they do have.
All right, well, we're going to go backwards. So let's start, of course, with Nick Williams. We have some video of him. Obviously, guys, got hurt early on. We haven't seen much of him, but was a guy that everyone was excited about that hopefully could be kind of that guy you could work with and big things could happen.
Big guy, hurt all year last year, but he's been around. He's been exposed to the team. He was exposed to some of the veteran players. You know, it's kind of the way it works here when it's working well. The Kimo von Olhoffens pass it down. The Aaron Smiths pass it down. The Mike Logans pass it down. So now he's got a chance. That defensive line is in a state of flux. And while he hasn't played a lot of football, I'm guessing, Bob, if he stayed healthy last year, he wasn't going to have played a lot anyway, because you don't just come into the defensive line here and play a lot. But big guy seems to have the right attitude. We'll see what he's got.
Yeah, the thing with him, the difference in what you described and what actually was the reality, you know, Nick Williams injured a knee in training camp and was on injured reserve throughout the season. So, you know, had he at least gone through the training camp preseason process, probably would have landed on the practice squad, would have got a lot of good reps right out here on these fields right behind us. That didn't happen, and so you don't know where Nick Williams, a guy from Samford, small college as it is, you know, he was a seventh-round pick. Did the knee injury take enough away from him that, you know, his margin for error becomes none at this point? So we're going to have to see where he is. But, you know, when you look at, you know, you mentioned that the Steelers have needs along the defensive line. Sonny Harris, sixth-round pick in 2009. Ryan McBean, fourth-round pick in 2007. Those guys would be in kind of the prime of their careers if they had been picks that made it. They both were not. Then you also have Ziggy and Ta'amu. Both of them are gone as well. So, you know, kind of explains a little bit why the Steelers do need, I believe, to address defensive line in this draft.
All right, let's move on to the Steelers' sixth-round pick from last year. That was Vince Williams. Sorry, I almost said Nick Williams again. Vince, actually, due to Larry Foote's injury, kind of got thrown in there, as you like to say, baptism by fire. Played in 15 games, 11 starts at inside linebacker, tied for fifth on the team with 66 tackles. Young guy coming in might kind of prove that he can hang with the big boys.
Well, it kind of did by the end of the year. It was a struggle at times because it was so new to him. But at least the veterans I've talked about this guy were not disappointed. People saw growth. People saw some improvement. And when he was locked in, when he knew what he was doing, people saw a football player. Now, you didn't see that all the time when he was in there, but 11 starts is a significant number for a rookie, particularly for a guy that nobody was really doing backflips about when they drafted. He was a non-combine guy, and they drafted him anyway, so kind of a long shot coming in, but circumstances conspired. He got a shot, and I don't think he dropped the ball taking advantage of the opportunities he was presented.
No, I agree with you. You know, Vince Williams, good inside linebacker for this scheme. Again, once he learns a little bit more about what offenses are trying to do to him, I think he'll be much better. But, you know, this kid played a lot of football at Florida State. Find the ball, get the guy with it on the ground. I mean, they teach that.
It's a good theory.
Yeah, he has learned that. So, you know, yeah, good sixth-round pick. Vince Williams, good sixth-round pick.
Find the ball,
get the guy with the ball.
Get the guy on
the ground. With the guy who has the ball.
You should star that.
Right.
Yeah. Like, all right, let's move on to Justin Brown. He spent some time on the Steelers practice squad last year. Still with the team now, there is no practice squad per se in the offseason. A guy who's tall. We like tall receivers, right?
Yeah, but, I mean, supposed to.
Right.
And, you know, I don't know. I don't know about Justin Brown. I mean, played at Penn State for the first part of his college career, finished up at Oklahoma with Landry Jones. You know, it is possible to draft a receiver on the sixth round and have him be a starter for you and even go to the Pro Bowl. That is not against the rules. I looked it up. And
write that down, Pursuta.
Yeah.
Oh, I knew that.
Antonio Brown is a recent example of that. You know, this is, I believe, make or break for Justin Brown. You get drafted 1 year. You spend a season on the practice squad. One more chance. We'll find out what it is. I mean, but as you mentioned, Missy, he is tall, and the Steelers do have a need for someone with a little bit of height. You know, we'll see if Justin Brown has enough of what it takes.
Yeah, you would think if they were viewing him as a can't-miss guy to fulfill that need, we wouldn't be hearing so much about they still need a tall receiver. So I think that's a position that's going to get attention. It's going to get early attention, and that's going to mean less opportunity for guys such as Justin Brown.
All right, moving on to Terry Hawthorne, the one guy who did not make it very far out of this draft class with the Steelers. Dealt with a lot of injury issues at training camp and just kind of didn't really seem to click in terms of catching on his fast labs.
Yeah, you know, fifth-round pick Terry Hawthorne, as you mentioned, Missy, did not make it out of training camp, was not even put on the practice squad. And I understand it's a fifth-round pick, but again, there are quality backup-type situational players available in that round. And, you know, the Steelers, again, you look at the cornerback position and you see the need for them there and playmakers in addition to top of the depth chart people at corner, but also in numbers. And here are some of the recent draft picks. Terry Hawthorne, we mentioned, fifth last year. Terrence Frederick, seventh in 2012. Curtis Brown, a number three in 2011. Cresden Butler, a number five in 2010. Joe Burnett, a number five in 2009. And Ricardo Coakley, a guy the Steelers traded up for in the second round of the 2004 draft. If Ricardo Coakley was still here, he would be younger than Ike Taylor. So you can even go that far back and look at some mistakes that were made at a particular position that have created the situation that the Steelers are in now. Corner is certainly one of them. It's not like the Steelers haven't taken some shots to address the position. And let's not forget, Deshae Townsend was a fourth-round pick. So if any of these guys had become Deshae Townsend, even, I mean, I don't think you'd be in the situation you're in now.
Yeah, I'm sensing a trend with you today.
Well, you know, I think it's kind of easy when you look at it this way to understand, you know, why they are where they are.
I'm a little intimidated by all the research. But
well, don't let it fool you. There won't be any next week. I do it every other week, you know.
We'll come prepared next week. All right, let's move on to Landry Jones. Obviously, guys, other than the preseason, not much that we have seen from him other than pretty much at practice. Where do you feel that he kind of sits right now in terms of how he fits in on this team other than being behind Bruce Gradkowski?
I have no idea. They saw something in him. I'm not saying he's good, bad, indifferent. I just don't have enough information. I will say that I think they took a shot with him. They obviously liked him coming out, and I think Ben Roethlisberger is closer to the end than the beginning. Not that he's going to retire in a year or anything like that, but it's not too early to start looking for that next franchise quarterback. And if you see a guy that gets your attention at all as a maybe, why not? One a year until you find the right guy.
Well, and let me say this about Landry Jones. I think that where he really kind of suffers is, you know, you see Ben play the position with his dynamic skill set, and then you watch Landry Jones play the position often in training camp. You know, one will follow the other in reps, and you see the difference in the arm strength and the accuracy and those kind of things, and you go, ugh, this guy's awful. But I think when Landry Jones learns to play the position, you know, he will have to succeed as an NFL quarterback in a different way than Ben Roethlisberger has used to succeed as an NFL quarterback. Landry Jones is going to have to be a system guy, know where to go with the ball, make quick decisions, you know, try and improve your accuracy, don't make stupid mistakes. He's not going to be a playmaker, gambler, down the field kind of swashbuckling guy that Ben Roethlisberger is. And I think the first thing that needs to happen is you have to come to grips with that, Pursuta. Okay, just calm down. He doesn't have a big arm like Ben. And once, then you see if he can develop. I mean, I still don't. I wouldn't even say Landry Jones, in terms of his ceiling, is a franchise quarterback. I wouldn't.
Well, then you got to keep looking.
Well, he could be a solid number two. He could be a backup.
But there is need at that position then, based on my theory of better keep checking them out as they come along. Because you don't want to get caught.
Well, I think you're the first
with
thing.
No options.
The first thing you do there is, you know, Ben is Ben, and he's going to be the starter. I think you evaluate Landry Jones in the way that is he getting closer to taking Bruce Gradkowski's job?
Yeah.
If he is not and cannot, then you have to make that change. But if he is, then you make that change, and then you bring in another young guy to see, you know, what his ceiling might be. But I mean, I don't think you're looking for Ben's replacement on Friday or Saturday next week.
No, but maybe in this draft, because if the next Tom Brady's there in round six, I looked that up. You can draft a really good franchise quarterback.
The next Tom Brady is there in the sixth round, the Steelers will pick T. Martin on the fifth.
All right, staying in the third round, let's now move on to Shamarco Thomas. We already mentioned at the top of the show that he was traded, the Steelers traded with the Cleveland Browns to get him, guys. You know, dealt with that ankle injury, as you see here on the full screen. Played in 14 games, though, two starts, and also had a big contribution labs on special teams.
Yeah, to me, I mean, I always look at that, especially for defensive backs and linebackers who come to the Steelers as draft picks or, you know, as young players in general. Do they kick butt on special teams to some degree? Because when you go back and you look at the history, I mean, back to Greg Lloyd. Greg Lloyd was a butt kicker on special teams. I mean, so, you know, if a guy has that, I think that, you know, that, again, what Pursuta wrote down, find the ball, read it to me, find the ball,
get the guy with the ball on the ground.
That is special teams, and that's also a big part of defense. So if you have that first part down, you can teach them how to play the scheme and, you know, maybe end up with a decent position player. But, yeah, Shamarco Thomas showed me enough on special teams and in some certain situations last year to have hope for him moving forward and quickly moving forward, you know, soon.
I think there's great hope for him. You know, he was playing regularly in the sub-package stuff before he got hurt. And for a rookie to be able to do even that on the defense suggests he's not your average rookie. So I think the Mike Mitchell signing has alleviated some pressure at that safety position. Maybe he, Shamarco Thomas, can get a little more time to apprentice or internship. He can be brought along slowly. But I think this kid's a player. I think he showed him last year he's got some potential to be much better than average, and nothing wrong with that.
Okay, Marcus Wheaton up next, also another rookie who dealt with some injuries last season. Two different finger injuries caused him to miss four games. He did play in 12, six catches for 64 yards. Also did some stuff on kickoff returns, and again, Labs, as you mentioned, special teams.
Yeah, you know, the Marcus Wheaton, to me, of all of the players going into their second seasons that we have talked about so far, Marcus Wheaton is the one that the Steelers need the most immediate and significant jump in production from as we sit here today. Marcus Wheaton, I believe he has a lot of the things you're looking for from a receiver. He's not the tall guy that we talked about earlier, but he's fast. You know, he has some, you know, escapability when he gets into the secondary. You know, the finger thing, I mean, you know, a receiver with bum fingers, I mean, you really don't know what you have when a guy has that kind of injury. He made some special teams tackles, shows me he's willing to mix it up a little bit, do some of the things that are maybe not as glamorous contributions to the team. And I like that mindset. And again, I mean, I'm looking for something big from Marcus Wheaton and soon.
You're not the only one. School is out with Marcus Wheaton. You know, he spent last year having his locker right next to Ben Roethlisberger's and learning and absorbing all he could from him. He hung around Jericho Cotchery so much, Marcus Wheaton did, that he called him Uncle Jayco. Well, you know, the time to absorb is now over. The time to show us what you learned is at hand, and it's going to be that way even if the Steelers get a Mike Evans in the draft, even if they get a Kelvin Benjamin, even if they get an Odell Beckham. Those guys are still going to be rookies. Marcus Wheaton is going to be advanced well past that. He needs to have a good year, I believe, for this offense to have a good
year. And let me just throw this in about Marcus Wheaton as well. He was a guy that you saw here regularly from 1st of February to today. Marcus Wheaton and Cam Hayward were the two guys I saw.
And the entire O-line.
Well, right, but I mean that I saw.
Gotcha.
By the way, like the way I dropped those three draft names in?
Yeah, pretty good.
Set the table
You're
a little
getting
bit
ready for next week,
wet
aren't you?
Wet the whistle
you?
A little bit.
All right, let's move on to the Steelers' second-round draft pick of last year, Le'Veon Bell. And Pursuta, since he's a Michigan State guy, we'll let you toot your horn first.
You know, once he got healthy and in the lineup, did anybody see anything they did not like? This guy's a complete player. He's an every-down back. He's a feature back. He is that because he is equally adept in the running game and in the receiving game. I still think if they can get the outside zone thing going a little bit, Lab, you know, they tried last year until about the regular season opener, about eight plays in, and then didn't try so much thereafter. But the one thing we didn't see from Le'Veon Bell was a preponderance of big play runs. I think you'll see more of those on the cutback stuff when they get the outside zone up to speed. But this guy was a guy that the Steelers identified early in the process last year, went after aggressively, and I think we saw throughout the 2013 season why that was the case.
Well, in this offseason, the Steelers did pick up free agent LeGarrette Blount. We had a chance to catch up with him and talk about how he feels like he will complement Le'Veon Bell.
I'm just hoping to come in here and contribute in some kind of way, you know. Give a little bit more of a tough running style, you know, to the offense, you know. Le'Veon is a big dude, you know, and he, like, I asked him today and he's 6'2". I didn't even know that, you know, and he's a little bit taller than I am. So, you know, I just want to come give a physical aspect to the game. You know, with me coming out here being as big as I am and him doing all the things that he does, you know, it could be really effective.
Right. I agree with that, too. And, you know, as Mike said earlier, what was there not to like about Le'Veon Bell once he got into the lineup? And to me, I agree with him. There was nothing not to like. I thought one of the key portions of this offseason was going to be the effort to find a kind of good backup to him. I think LeGarrette Blount has the potential to be that. I also think, you know, he runs the ball kind of like the Steelers like to do it. And so I think he's going to be a good fit here. You know, Mike, I think if there's any addressing of this position in the draft, it's going to be for someone who is different than those two guys and maybe more of a specialty player.
One of those little guys that
is very fast.
Water bugs around and catches the ball.
And you know, get
those in fifth, sixth, seventh
exactly,
round.
Yeah. Exactly. That's what I mean. So, but I would say that there is somewhat of a need for someone like that.
LeGarrette Blount, seeing him live and in person, is way bigger than I thought he was. I thought he was a big physical back, but this guy is monstrous for his position.
Yeah, I mean, and it's not so much height to me as it is
wide
thickness.
Yeah.
Yes, he doesn't look like someone that you know, I would be real interested in meeting in a hole in the middle of the line in the middle of an NFL field.
All right, and with the 17th overall of the 2013 NFL draft, the Steelers took
Jarvis Jones.
Yes, let's talk about Jarvis. Here are some stats we have. Played in 14 games, 8 starts, 42 tackles, only 1 sack. I know that's a big thing. We'll get to that. The 9 tackles, 2 passes defensed in the finale against Cleveland. Also played some special teams, kind of got thrown in there early. There was some injuries with Woodley and Worlds, and Worlds kind of came back, took over that position. Do you feel like that was a good thing for Jarvis Labs to kind of maybe get back to learning the Dick LeBeau defense?
Well, what I think that is kind of crystallized things for Jarvis was once the Steelers realized that Jason World's best position was on the left side, because Jarvis Jones is a right outside linebacker in Dick LeBeau's 3-4 scheme. That's the kind of build he has. You know, think about Greg Lloyd, think about Joey Porter. Those are the kinds of guys you want at the right outside linebacker in this defense. Jarvis Jones, you know, as he grows into his body a little bit more, that's what he is going to become. The Jason World's, he played really well last year, and because of that, Jarvis Jones's development was retarded a little bit because they had them lined up at the same spot because the expectation was Lamar Woodley had the left side handled. But as we found out, that was not the case, and then it became clear that Jason Worlds' best spot was on the left side. So once that kind of all got taken care of and figured out, I think we saw some good things from Jarvis Jones. You did mention Missy, only 1 sack. That is how he is going to earn his money in this league, that and making plays on the football. Again, think Joey Porter, think Greg Lloyd. That's what you need from that position on this defense.
Yeah, whenever I think about Jarvis Jones or talk about Jarvis Jones, I go back to a play, or I should say a sequence of plays in training camp where Jarvis Jones rushed the passer and batted a football, where he covered a back in the flat and batted a football, and when he covered a tight end down a seam in a zone and intercepted a football, he got his hands on it, Bob, 3 times in about 5 or 6 snaps. If you can do that, you have the athletic ability to play the position. Now it's a matter of making sure he's coached up and technique up and furious enough and intangible enough. Hello, Joey Porter. Meet your new project. I think the only way Jarvis Jones does not succeed and is not remembered as a really timely first-round pick is if the spinal stenosis issues that had some people backing off of him in the draft in the first place, if those should crop up, if it should be a physical thing with Jarvis Jones, then he's not going to make it like I think he's going to make it. But yeah, if that is not the case, this guy's going to be fine.
Yeah, because he wants it. And that's – he obviously has a lot of the raw skills of the athletic ability, and he wants it. And so, yeah, I agree with you. I think that, you know, as Bill Cowher would say, his future is ahead of him.
As Mike Tomlin would say, the arrow's pointing up.
Oh, boy. All right. We are going to end it on that note. Thanks for joining
us
today.
You know what else Bill Cowher would say? Our starters will start.
Only in the preseason.
And Jarvis would be one of those.
All right. Come up with some quotes for next week. All right, that's it for Steelers.com Live at 4. For Bob and Mike, I'm Missy. We'll see you next Thursday when the draft kicks off.